Welcome to Cider Chat. This week, we have part two with Zeke Goodban talking about growing quince. It's part two of the Grow Quince Initiative.
Going up.
Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. I am really excited to be rolling out this week's episode with Zeke Goodban. Last week's part one of this two-part series was just chock full of info. I mean, following along, it's kind of like writing it down, or just sitting back and listening, and then maybe listening again and again, because he is really delivering, and this week's episode is going to be no different. We're going to get to Zeke shortly, but of course, we always have news out and about in Ciderville. And also the fact that this week's episode 253 is the last episode of the year 2020.
Goodbye.
Yes, goodbye 2020 and hello 2021. Look, we're going to be getting to Zeke Goodban coming up, but first I have some news from the sponsors of this here podcast. So let's roll to that next. The American Cider Association's annual trade conference called CiderCon will be taking place February 3rd through the 5th, 2021. It's only 6 weeks out from this year episode 253, so I really want to encourage you to now register for this virtual conference that will have both pre-recorded sessions and live sessions to partake in. As always, CiderCon is a connector both in the U.S. for makers and internationally. And as usual, the lineup of speakers and sessions is something not to be missed. Whether you are a commercial maker, someone who is thinking about doing this, or in the process of being a startup cidery right now. And shoot, it's even great for cider enthusiasts like myself. Go to ciderassociation.org. And you'll see a registration page right there. All right, now we're getting our to-do list taken care of. We could check off registered for CiderCon 2021. Check. Next up, while you're online, you want to go to the following website, nyicidercompetition.com. That stands for the New York International Cider Competition. That takes place on February 21st, so a couple weeks after CiderCon, and it's specific for commercial makers looking to get their ciders in front of retail buyers to be judged. It's the third annual New York International Cider Competition, and so with that history behind them and the fact that it's run by the alcohol professor himself, Adam Levy, you know it's going to be a top-notch competition. And it's really seeking out advice and thoughts on cider that's going out to the market. So what better thing for a commercial maker to do? Go to nyicidercompetition.com and start getting your ciders in now for that February 21st, 2021 judging date. Now it's time for the Q&A with Fermentis. And this week's question is, are all Fermentis yeast cultures gluten-free? For instance, if I choose a yeast typically used by brewers, such as a Saison culture, can I assume that it too is gluten-free? Once again, we hear from Fermentis yeast expert, Kevin Lane.
Hello, my name is Kevin Lane, and I'm the Technical Sales Support Manager for the Americas for Fermentis. Yeah, the answer to this is that all of the yeast that Fermentis produces and brings to the market are certified gluten-free. The yeast that Fermentis grows, we use a molasses base that is gluten-free. Any of the Fermentis yeast, whether it's from our cider range, like we're talking about today, or from our brewing ranges, the Saf Ale, Saf Lager, and Saf Brew, or the wine range Saffino, or the spirits range Saff Spirit portfolio, all of those are going to be gluten-free yeast. And simply it's because we grow the yeast in media that does not contain gluten. The one thing that I would kind of warn about is that you wouldn't want to use yeast coming from a brewery necessarily, because typically the beer is going to contain gluten because of it being a barley-based fermentation. Sometimes wheat is involved, sometimes rye, a number of other grains that have gluten in them. So if your intention is to produce gluten-free beverages, it's best to use yeast that for sure has never been exposed to gluten. Therefore, you wouldn't want to use a brewer's yeast to later make a cider. Again, if your intention is to produce something gluten-free, because there will be some carryover from the previous fermentation to this next batch to your cider. So that's just a small warning for you.
Thank you, Kevin Lane from Fermentis. You can find out more by going to fermentis.com. And what a great tip he is giving us. Like, if you go to Fermentis, you know 100% gluten-free. And this is a good cautionary note for all of us in Ciderville to be paying attention to, because right now, one of the hallmarks of cider is that it can reliably be assumed that it is gluten-free. So if you're going out and kind of, you know, I don't know, hobbyist or whatever, hawking some brewer's yeast from your local pal at the brewery, and you put that in your cider, and it means now that you can't give it to folks who are gluten intolerant, and the word gets out that, oh man, you know, you don't really know whether cider's gluten-free or not, that could really screw us all up. So please don't do that. Please don't. Be wise. You know, we want to land into 2021 on our magic carpet, landing safely to the platform to get off into a better world. So please be cautious about that. And thanks again for Fermentis for doing this Q&A with us. Next week, it's going to be about dry and liquid, the two types of forms that yeast comes in. And we'll see what Kevin Lane of Fermentis has to say about that.
Walking through the orchards.
Up next, it's part two of the hashtag Grow Quince initiative. In part one, you heard from the founder of the Vermont Quince Company, and that is Nan Stefanik. And she told us a little bit about this grant initiative. So allow me to fill that out. In late 2019, the Vermont Quince Company was awarded a USDA-funded specialty crop block grant program. And that was funded through the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets to support commercial and backyard growers by compiling and disseminating resources and expertise about growing quince in New England. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about the harvest. In part one, it was a bit about pest management, and this one we're going to different varieties, the cracking of fruit, what happens on the actual fruit itself, markets for quince, storage, and cold temperatures before the harvest, and also a bit about grafting. Once again, the featured person speaking during this presentation is a renowned horticulturist who's been in Vermont for quite a long time, and that is Zeke Goodman. He is now based at Champlain Orchards, which is on the east side of Lake Champlain in Vermont. So let's go to this conversation next. If you haven't got a chance to listen to part one, definitely do it. That's episode 252. Let's listen next to Zeke Goodman.
When you first start to grow quince is when are these ripe? And most quince will be a bright yellow when they're ripe. Most quince, you should be able to shut your eyes and walk to where the quince are. They're among the most aromatic of any fruit tree fruits. So you can pretty much close your eyes and let your nose take you to where the quince are. And that's a good sign that they're ready when they're really very aromatic. The other thing to do is to cut one open using a stout knife, because you probably all know that they're very hard fruit. Take a look at the seeds. If the seeds are still somewhat white or just beginning to turn brown, the fruit isn't ripe. When the seeds are a chocolate brown and they're aromatic and they're a bright yellow, then it's time to pick them. For us, all of those varieties that I mentioned are generally, we'd start usually maybe skimming some quince off the tops of the trees, the ones that are getting full sunlight. Sometimes the end, maybe around the 10th of October, but the main harvest of quince would be about the mid to the 20th or 24th of October around here. And we'd go through and skim through. We'd pick the brightest colored fruit first, wait a few days, depending on the weather, and go back and see what else had ripened and was ready for picking. Most of those varieties did very well with that. The one variety that didn't do well for us was orange. And while it had very nice fruit, it stayed green. It didn't ripen well for us. And when you pick quince that's green, a little bit green, you get like this, where it won't store well. It's not going to be aromatic. It's going to be an inferior fruit. And when you cut it open, it will be discolored inside. And even people processing this won't want that discolored fruit. For us, I wouldn't be planting more orange quince. Maybe Allie, who has probably a longer span of time to be growing quince, maybe in 20 years she could be growing orange around here and the weather will be warmer and you'll be able to ripen it around here. But we're currently not able to ripen it well here. Let's see, Van Damen is one of my favorite quince for the shape, the size, and the flavor of the fruit. Smyrna, I don't have as much experience with, but that's very promising. I was impressed with the early cropping of that. And Champion, for the fresh market and retail sales, that's a very good quince to grow. You know, even people who don't want to cook with quince will want to have some quince to bring home on their table because it's such a beautiful fruit and so aromatic. Now, oftentimes, in a year where we're having really dry weather, in a year when you get tomatoes cracking in your garden, you're going to get quince cracking. That, you know, dry weather followed by a flush of rain or moisture, or the reverse, a lot of wet weather than dry weather, seems to be more dry with a slug of rain just before harvest, causes some varieties, especially that Kagansuga and Aromatica to split. If they split, they'll generally, that split flesh will harden off and they'll be fine to pick, especially for processing or cooking. But those splits often will begin to rot. That will spread through the quince. And so their shelf life is pretty limited. So you pretty much have to, and some of them will begin rotting on the trees, depending on how much rain we're getting. Practices that would minimize that splitting would be to avoid those two varieties. But another would be to, if you had irrigation or the ability to water, so that in times of really dry conditions, they were getting adequate water each week, either through hand watering or irrigation tape. So keeping a stable moisture level would reduce that cracking. So markets for quince. We've had hard cider makers coming to us wanting to use quince for some of their hard ciders, but also jam makers, all the products that Nan is making. The fresh market, people just wanting to add quince to the pies they're making, or some people making membrillo. The fresh markets, it's because they're not a lot of quince growers, it's a pretty good return on any quince that you grow and harvest well. There's the decoction that can be made once you're cooking with quince. You can save the cores and simmer them down into reduction. And it's very good if you're talking at a presentation and your throat gets dry. You can take a little slug of quince juice and it soothes your throat. And quince stores pretty well. We store it generally in the refrigerated room with apples. We keep the, because most of our production apples, we keep it at a temperature that's good for apples, which is 31 degrees. I think that's a little too cold for quince. I'd need a couple more years to figure it out entirely, but it seems as though that might be too cold. Some of the quince that's picked late, seems to exacerbate those cold storage temperatures, the browning, the internal browning in some fruit. So it doesn't seem to affect the fruit that's picked earlier in the season and stored, but the late fruit, that tends to bother them more. We used to think that quince were resistant to cold temperatures before harvest, sometimes getting down to 25 degrees or below freezing. We used to think, oh, these quince, they look fine. And they do the next couple of days, but we found that those were more likely to develop internal browning after harvest. Let's see. If you're growing or propagating quince, you can, you know, graft a Van Damen piece of cyanwood onto a Smyrna quince, or you can save some seeds from a quince, grow that as to be your rootstock and graft onto them. You can graft quince onto pears. If you have a Bartlett pear in your backyard, you could graft a couple scions of quince onto that and have a tree that would produce Bartletts and quince. You can grow pears on quince rootstock, and you can grow medlars on quince rootstock. So quince are said to be self-fruitful. So you can have one quince and, like peaches, get some fruit. But they tend to do better and be more productive if you have two varieties of quince. Some studies have found trees just like company. They're social, I won't call them social animals, but they're social plants. And so having more than one variety increases the productivity. That's one other thing to think about.
Rooting
cuttings. Ah, rooting cuttings. You could do that, sure. You could take some cuttings, put them a little, thank you, a little rooting hormone, put them in a sand and peat or sand, some rooting media, maybe a little heat mat underneath them, a little plastic over the top to preserve humidity, and probably get them to root. And they grow out on their own roots, and you'd get a full-size quince tree. So you could do that.
You mentioned seedling quince rootstock. What's the size difference with quince when it's on its own seedling quince as rootstock? I mean, semi-dwarf with the grafting.
Yeah,
so.
they're about semi-dwarf size. It's not as though they're grown on semi-dwarf rootstock. So growing on seedling, you'd get, they're just naturally going to be sort of in that. I'm using the semi-dwarf as an example.
As a size.
Yeah.
Please. Okay. Because I know a lot of the quince rootstocks that I see that are sold are dwarfing, like fully dwarf, very small.
Yeah. Some of them aren't so much. Some of the pear rootstock that are used are also. There are some that are a little more dwarfing, but they're still in that semi-dwarf range.
Are the seedlings any more cold tolerant?
It depends. Because you're taking the genetics from seed, you might get something that's incredibly cold tolerant, or you might get something that's not.
Have you done any of that with propagating from seed?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No. If I were, 40 years younger, I might. you know, I should probably be transitioning from tree fruit to annual crops at this point. So.
Tip of the glass to Nan Stefanik of the Vermont Quince Company for bringing us this two-part series on the hashtag Grow Quince Initiative. If you want to find out more about Nan or Zeke, you could go to the show notes for this here episode 253. Or on the World Wide Web, just search for hashtag Grow Quince. I loved how Zeke noted that the quince, pears, and medlars all get along together. It reminds me quite a bit of our orchard here at Cider Chat Central.
Yes, it does.
Right, medlars? Well, let's see. We have two medlars growing on quince rootstock.
It's really cozy.
I bet it is. And there's a couple pear trees growing on quince.
And they are all quite healthy.
Yeah, they are peri pear. And there's even a quince growing on a pear rootstock.
That's the noisy section of the orchard.
Well, yeah, doesn't surprise me. Well, that just goes to show you that there's, well, as we would say, it takes many apples to make an orchard, and diversity is just what it's all about. And even if you don't want to have quince in your own garden to, you know, process or to ferment into cider, they're just beautiful and aromatic. So definitely think about, well, what would you say, Mr. Quince?
Grow quince.
That's it. And with that, we leave you here. From the Talking Palms and myself, we'd like to wish you a happy new year. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.